Good day. My name is Stephen S., and I am an alcoholic and a member of the Area 53 Archives Committee. One of our committee's projects is get oral histories recorded of folks who've been around for a while. And today, we've got one of our person who's been sober since 1981 who's going to share his story with us. I just want to make this disclaimer first. The oral history interview is being conducted by the Area 53 Archives Committee to pass on the history of our fellowship through the shared memories of its members. No duplication or reuse of this interview beyond sharing on platforms of the Area 53 Archives Committee is authorized without the express written consent of the subject. In this case, that would be Dave. So Dave is here today. He's from Westerville, Ohio. His sobriety date is August the 17th of 1981, and he's a member of the afterwork group. That's what I know so far. So with that, Dave, I'm going to turn it over to you, and you might want to start by just telling us a little bit about what it was like before you got before AA and how you got to AA.
Thank you, Stephen. I am David, and I am an alcoholic and grateful to be sober today, and hopefully I'll go slow because I'm a little nervous at the currently. I was raised in a pretty large family. There were six children, and it was in a town in Licking County, which is adjacent to Franklin County, northeast of Franklin County. And there were six kids and in the family. We kind of struggled. It was difficult. My dad had a blue collar job, and my mom didn't work. When I was real young, she took in a lot of laundry jobs, so she would iron clothes and do stuff like that to get extra money. How I felt growing up, I can see now that I had trouble relating to people. I had a lot of fear of people, and I was anxious, and I think I was, what happened was I went to Catholic school, and I was good at taking tests, but I was a real active person. I bounced around a lot. So I was a kind of a, what they called a wiggle worm. When I really liked an academic subject, I really did well in it. And if I didn't like it, I just sort of tried to slide by. That was just kind of like my personality. If I got pats on the back, I really did more of it. And when I did well in school academically, made the National Honor Society, and I was a dutiful son and a older boy in the Catholic Church that our family was a member of. My father wasn't. He never went to church. The kids I ran around with, I was like the sports editor of the high school. It was called the Norhian. It was the annual that came out every year for 1966. So I got credit for that. Everybody that I did all kinds of academic projects with and social projects with were going to college. And deep down inside, I didn't really feel, I was scared of the idea of going to college. I didn't know how I'd fit in. And of course, I didn't know how I'd fit in around people I didn't know, and even people I did know. I felt a little anxious about being accepted. But when I went to Ohio State, I got into a rooming house, and I my first quarter there was in winter quarter of 1967. After the first midterm, there were usually two midterms. It was still a quarter system. And after the first midterm, the guys in the rooming house scheduled or arranged for a drinking event. So we went out to this bar, a bunch of us, and had a beer or two. That was the first time I did anything socially at Ohio State. I was very, very nervous about it. I was scared. But when I came back from that bar, a couple of the guys had a six-pack of beer in their rooms. So I don't know whether they invited me up. They probably did. I don't think I had the courage to barge in or anything like that. I went up, had a drink, And I fell in love with it. I really felt accepted. I felt at ease. I felt like I belonged. Up until that point, I was very, as I said, scared and felt out of place. And but once I started drinking, you know, within about 2 months, I started causing problems for myself when I was in the bars. There'd be some confrontations or some little things that I got real petty when I drank. I think I was just self-centered. I just think I was a person who was insecure and who was afraid to get to know girls or get to be somebody, get to have a social interaction with people. I was still comfortable with socially interacting. Initially, I felt comfortable drinking, but I started realizing that this first quarter that I was drinking, that sometimes my moods would change or my attitude changed while I was drinking. I'd go out with the intention of having fun, but something wouldn't go my way. I didn't see it that way. I always thought something wrong was happening or something that shouldn't happen needed to be changed or something like that. You know, I was always trying to find the girls. I felt more comfortable going to parties after the outside the bar to meet girls. But when I started having these problems, it concerned me. I tried to control my drinking while I drank. Sometimes I tried to not go out as much, but I just had that lure of Friday nights and Saturday nights, especially football season, basketball season. I just loved the party life. I was on academic probation for one quarter because my first couple of quarters there, I flunked some courses, and that caused problem. After spring quarter, I was also having problems in spring quarter of that year. I passed out drunk in the hallway of the apartment of a classmate that we were in the same class. I forget. I think it was a history class or something like that. But in my second year, in September of 1967, I just drank in different bars. But I that one time that I had the problem in the one bar, I became leery of going back there, which became sort of a, not so much a habit, it was a pattern. I never confronted the problem that created that incident that occurred. I just thought there was something weird that happened, and I just avoided being around those people. I blamed other people. I blamed people, places, and things. I continued to drink. I went to journalism school, and I was in journalism at Ohio State. And when I went there, I liked hanging out in the journalism building and went to the newsroom because I was in news editorial journalism. So it was like newspapers and magazines. And I never wrote for magazines, but I wrote for the Lantern, and which was the newspaper for the student newspaper at Ohio State. And so I was doing well there, but I was insecure, and I was always insecure. If I can categorize my personality, it was kind of like I was an impatient with my feelings. I was always a little bit restless and just uncomfortable, eager to please, wanting to say things right, being impatient. Sometimes I didn't come across as very professional. I usually make a couple steps forward, and then I'd have a little faux pas, and then I'd you know, I'd be embarrassed, and of course I'd hate myself because I didn't look as gifted and as talented and as worldly as all these people that I worked with. There were some people in the journalism school there at Ohio State that later became nationally known journalists. So then I started really drinking more. My uncomfortability and my problems got a little more frequent. And I think a very big incident happened when I through the School of Journalism got a job working for the Columbus Dispatch as a writer and working in the sports office and writing stories about high school football, high school basketball, and then after the games on Friday and Saturday night, answer the phones from athletic directors and write little four-paragraph stories about who scored the touchdowns or who won the basketball game and that sort of stuff. I did well. The very next year, they asked me back. And at that point in time, my drinking had progressed to the point and so psychologically and for some other reasons, I decided to turn down that opportunity. I felt embarrassed about being a sports writer around some of those people at the School of Journalism. Besides, I know that thinking about school and Fridays and Saturday nights, I'd have to be sacrificing those nights. And I look forward to those nights too much. So I made a decision based on self and so I can get more drinking in and less professional advancement in, I guess is what the moral of the story is. And
At what point did it get your drinking get to be a big enough problem that you thought that you needed to get some help with it?
When I had quit school right around 1970, I had a problem when I had a experience when I got drunk and I did this occasionally. I vandalized some vehicles in a apartment parking lot, and I was drunk, and I did a lot of drinking, getting staggering drunk when the bars closed, and on the way home, being out of control. And so I went to jail, got arrested, went to jail, and I thought about that as a problem, but still, I thought, I'm going to watch myself. I'm going to watch myself more. And it got worse because I changed jobs and became a cab driver for, and for the next 7 years from like 1970 to late 1977, I drove a taxi cab in the city of Columbus. That's when all I cared about was paying rent and drinking when I felt like drinking.
How did you get to AA?
I got to AA when I had a drunk driving accident. This was in 1976. Before then, I had had four arrests for and public intox and so forth, and still didn't think I couldn't control it. In other words, I felt like if I really worked hard at it, I could avoid the bad bars and that sort of stuff. So in 1976, I had a drunk driving hit skip, another vehicular charge, a sure clear distance, and went to a lawyer. The lawyer told me I needed to take a class at the Columbus Health Department. And at that class, it was a requirement to attend two AA meetings a week. So I went to, so for 2 months, for 8 weeks or so, I went to two AA meetings. During that time, I actually did get a prospective sponsor. Sponsor's name was Del J, and his wife was Elka. They were both members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm not sure which meeting I went to. They saw me. It might have been the Northland group, but I got invited over, and they had me for dinner, and I was just not ready. I went to those AA meetings. I went to the meeting at the House of Hope. I went to meetings in Gahanna. I went to meetings in, like I say, Northland, and I went to Riverside Hospital meetings. Mostly I went to speaker meetings. The speakers, I heard some things, but I was always comparing myself, and I was still 26 years old, and I wasn't ready. I felt I could really exert self-will and control my drinking while I was drinking. So for the next 5 years, well, I quit going to meetings after I had the court case resolved. When that was done, I very, very cautiously, slowly got back into the drinking. One thing that changed was that I drank less often. So in other words, going out to drink happened less often. I really wasn't a drinker at home. I didn't like drink. I never kept alcohol at home. I did all my drinking in the bar. So I liked being, you know, on a stage somewhere, I guess. I don't know, just there, something attracted me to that. And what I ended up experiencing after that was I drank less often, but when I drank, I got good and drunk. So I would, maybe you could say that was a periodic drunk, but I would get drunk, and my attitudes sometimes was out of control. And I, from 1976 to 1981, when I came back to AA, I had a number of jobs, and I lost them all, or I quit because I was mad. And I even owned, partially owned, a lawn care business that went under in immediately. It was just a couple of months, and it went under. That wasn't my idea. I went along with it. That was my personality. I never initiated or created something. What I would do is, if somebody said, "Let's do this," I'd do anything to maybe it would change what was happening in my life. And so I ended up getting in trouble several times. And I got some good jobs that I screwed up. I got a job in journalism that I screwed up, and public relations. And that was getting pretty close to the end. Then eventually I had my second DWI. And that's when I went to the point where when I went to jail in Franklin County Court, Franklin County Jail, I was ready to do something. And but when I got out, I wondered how serious it was. I still had doubts about how serious my drinking was, but I wasn't drinking. That happened on August 6th of 1981. August 19th, I had a court appearance. And at that court of appearance, I was the judgment was I would go to the alternatives to impaired driving school at Maryhaven. It was set up for October, late October, 2 months later. And I felt real, I wouldn't say overjoyed, but I was really happy that I wasn't going to go to the workhouse. When I left the courthouse, I thought I had 2 months. The first thing I thought was after that was, maybe I could have, you know, drink. All of a sudden, I felt like I had freedom to drink again because the jail wasn't impending or anything like that. And when I thought that, the next thought I thought was, you can't start drinking because you might not ever be able to stop. And that was the first time that I can recall ever thinking that I could not even start drinking. So I think right then and there, I was convinced that it was the first drink that got me drunk. That thought came from somewhere, and I think it came from what I heard in AA meetings or what I heard at the Columbus Health Department and those father, the priest that used to give sermons. Father Martin, thank you. Thank you very much. And he did such a great job. But of course, I wasn't ready for it then. But when I had this experience, I felt this fear that if I'd start drinking, it would probably kill me. And I said, I can't. So I had to go back to AA. I knew it. I knew
AA. Did you just go to a meeting or you make a phone call or what did you do?
I knew how to find the meetings. It was like 5 days later. I mean, I kept saying, I'm going to go to a meeting. And I was living in Pataska, and it was kind of like going through my head every day. I had just lost a job. And so I was in the middle of looking for another job. But I knew I had to go back to AA, and I had a meeting schedule, and I saw there was a cross ties group that met on Tuesday night out in the Eastmore section of Columbus. So I went to that meeting from Thursday to Tuesday, and I went to a meeting that night. And the reason I went to a meeting that night, because I felt like I'd been postponing it. And then I started getting scared that if I keep postponing it, I'm going to forget. And I have to go back. So I went to this AA meeting. It was a speaker meeting. And after the speaker meeting, a gentleman, Don H., came up to me afterward. Don H. was a sight impaired man with a cane, white cane with a red tip. And he said, we're going over to Friendly's Ice Cream Shop after the meeting right now, and I need a ride. Will you give me a ride over there? And you're invited. Come on. And so I said, okay. And so we went over to the ice cream shop. Once I started eating that ice cream, I started feeling calmer, and the people were very friendly. And I don't think these people talked any differently. This is the first time I went to a meeting after the meeting. And I wouldn't count that meeting with Dell and Elka at a dinner meeting that we had. It wasn't the same feeling. This feeling was I really felt I belonged. This was really, really comfortable. My fear of life as sober and AA had for 5 years, I was just it was something that was just going to be drudgery and boredom. And I felt I belonged there, and it was a great feeling. That's how I got started. The next day, I went to the Central Ohio Group Fellowship intergroup office on 1706 East Broad Street, and I went in there and started drinking coffee in the morning before the meetings. I went to the first meeting, and I started going to meetings at Central Office, and then I got a job working at. I met somebody in AA that worked at Taco Bell on Hamilton Road. So I got a job working there as an assistant to manager. So I got that. And I moved in with my parents in Johnstown. I went to the Johnstown meeting a lot of times on Friday night. I would drive into town and work at Taco Bell. I'd either go to a meeting before Taco Bell, or I'd go to a meeting after Taco Bell, because right down the street was the Rockwell meeting, Wednesday night Rockwell meeting, and on Wednesday night, also on Wednesday night there was the Live Lane group that met, which was over on Livingston Avenue and Elaine Road. Plus, I'd go to the Bexley group. When I drove in from Johnstown from my parents' house, I made a day of it. I usually end the day working at Taco Bell, or I'd at night, or I'd get off at Taco Bell early in the day and go to a meeting at night. And sometimes I, from Johnstown, I would go to the North Group on the way home. And it was at the North Group that I met my first sponsor. His name was Bob R. He, one of the guys he sponsored was Drew M. So I talked to Drew once or twice when I couldn't get a hold of Bob R. So I just started trying to do AA. It was kind of different, you know. The meetings seemed to have, there were more discussion meetings down at the 1706 intergroup office. They held them in the basement, and they were wild and freewheeling type stuff sometimes. And then, but there were always old timers there that kept it simple. I did a lot of, I don't know if I asked direct questions, but I would just like listen real closely to people, what they said, or I go up to them after the meeting. And actually they had a change in the office manager, and the new office manager was Patty's mom, and
Donna
S. And she would give me jobs. They had little 3x5 cards or 5x7 cards that you could type in the names of groups, and they had a filing system, and I helped Donna with that. And when I had time, I had a lot of time because I didn't like to stay with my parents out in outside Columbus. So I would come into Columbus like it was a job every day, and I'd either go to a central office meeting, or I'd have a go to the Taco Bell and work. So I kept in contact with Bob R. We never really went over the big book. And of course, that was a long time ago, but we talked mostly about steps 1, 2, and 3. And Bob would share his experience with dealing with life one day at a time. He had a high pressure job, and he would share stories about how, accepting the things he couldn't change, and how important it was for him to plan each day and get up and be very, well, methodical, very, very organized about what he wanted to do each day. But we never read anything out of the big book together. That was something I don't remember ever doing early on when I was in AA, starting in obviously in 1981. I did go to some meetings that were 12 and 12, 12 steps, 12 tradition meetings. I remember there was one at St. Charles, the boys Catholic school there on East Broad Street. And I went to a meeting there, and that's where I first met Bob S., who was a longtime counselor at Talbot Hall. And, there were lots of people that I knew casually, or I knew them in meetings, but it was kind of an interesting thing about that. I talked about that 12 steps and 12 tradition meeting, and somebody said something like, that's not the big book, and that's not the 12-step recovery program. And I didn't understand what it meant. I realize now it's an essay on further thoughts about the steps that our co-founder Bill W. talked about. But it was one of my personality traits is I always want to be right. And if I like something and you don't like it, I automatically think I'm wrong. And so I made a lot of decisions based on fear like that in AA, before AA. This experience when you get to getting to know myself was a slow process, and it takes continual effort at it.
Let me ask you, Dave, you've mentioned a whole bunch of different meetings you were going to, and I know you're a member of the after work group and have been for a long time. How did you settle in with a home group like that?
Okay. Well, my first home group was the Monday midday group that, and here was a strong individual. George M. was, he was like the permanent secretary there. He was a long time secretary, which might have been 5 years, which is for me, 5 years was a long time back then. And I met, that was my home group, the after work group. So I went there every Monday, and I helped set up the salt and pepper shakers because it was a, what they called it, eating meeting. So I there was a lot of old timers there, husbands and wives. So I enjoyed that as my home group for a while. And then Bob R. left town. He had got a job in North Carolina. And I unwisely just sort of was self-propelled for a year or so after Bob had left. And it was a couple of years later, like 1984, I got introduced to Glenn W., who was from Lancaster, and he was speaking at the Rockwell meeting, Wednesday night Rockwell meeting, and I really related to him. And somebody suggested I ask him to be my sponsor. He became my second sponsor, Glenn Wyckoff. Excuse me. Anyway, Glenn. And he was my sponsor for the next 20 years.
How you got involved in service? I know you've been active in general service for a considerable amount of time. Let's talk a little bit about that. So how did you get into that?
Glenn became, when I asked him to be my sponsor, he told me that it was important to, he was going to the assembly meetings, and he told me about them. He didn't push me right away. He did get me into the, when the after work group was started, he suggested that I become a member of that home group. I was one of the first members of the group, along with him and his wife, Mary. He became they had an election, and this was a district election. They had 38 districts at this time that were created, and one was District 27, which was in north of Broad Street, Gahanna, New Albany, that area. So he became the DCM when they had the district startup, and he brought me along to be the alternate DCM, because I had been a GSR at the Sunday night Elaine Road. But that meeting, I was a GSR, but I didn't go to very many assemblies. I wasn't really dedicated, but Glenn thought I needed to get more active. And when he got elected the DCM and I got elected the alternate DCM, he immediately resigned and made me the DCM. So that was kind of a clever way. You know, I kind of resented it, but I was afraid to say no. And so I became a DCM for District 27. They're the first DCM they had. What I just started holding regular meetings with Glenn's directions, trying to follow them closely as I can, and giving reports at the assemblies. I was still learning about that, how difficult it is to have sort of a leadership role, I guess is what you would call it. I wasn't much of a leader in my home group, but I was trying to do that in general service. And maybe I'm minimizing my being a good home group member at the after work group, but everything was a challenge to me. And making the sacrifice to go to the assemblies on every 3 months. And at that point in time, they were changing. At first, the assemblies were held at the Radisson Hotel in the basement, which was up on Sinclair Road. And then they changed. And I think the next place it got located, because the assembly people wanted it to be more centrally located for central and southeast Ohio, they moved it to Zanesville. So we went all this, a 60-mile drive to Zanesville. And so I started going to Zanesville every 3 months, you know, September, December, March, and June. That was the... that's where I started getting more job. When I moved on from the DCM job, got a job as the secretary for Area 53. At that time, that's when we were starting to go. This was like 2007. I think that was like.
Well, what jobs in the general service structure have you not held? When you were secretary, what was your progression through then?
Okay, my progression was I became I was the assistant to the secretary. Then I became elected the secretary, and then I got my next job was I later became a. On public information committee, and was and became the chairperson of that committee. I got more active and was trying to be the area chair, and I got elected the area chair. This was after I had moved out of state. Lived in Battle Creek, Michigan for 4 years because my job moved me there. And when I came back was when I started getting involved in and being standing for the area chair. This was like in 2000 and right around 2001. I didn't do well as the area chair. As I look back on it now, at the time I when I stood for alternate delegate the next year, wasn't elected. And you know, I found out when things didn't go my way, I had to get honest with myself, and did a better job after that. I worked harder and prepared more thoroughly. And one of the great lessons was that there's no substitute for preparation being continually trying to improve and to learn more and to be the best informed person that I could be. And
well, you must have been doing a reasonable job, because I was it 2013 when you were selected as our delegate, so paneled 63.
Right. That was, yes, I found out that there was going to be a special election to elect a alternate delegate. And my sponsor informed me about it, and so I attended that meeting. And when a question came up, who's going to stand, I was I think me and a couple other people stood, and I became the new alternate delegate. And at that time, Glenn P. was already been elected the area delegate. And this was even before Glenn P., which was 2011. That was his first year as the area 53 panel 61 delegate. And so it was that fall that I became the alternate delegate and started working with Glenn and doing the jobs he asked me to do. And that was a tremendous opportunity. And I, my first event was with the Conference of Delegates, past and present, and with Glenn and in Wisconsin. And I really did enjoy Glenn as a partner and in the job. And 2012 was Glenn's second year. His first year, he invited me to attend a General Service Conference with him. So that was in 2011, in May of 2011. And that was 2010 when I got elected, and 2011 was the first of the 2 year term, 2011-2012. The second year, Glenn got sick, and I was the alternate chair or alternate delegate, whose job was to chair the mini conference. So that year, I was the chairperson of the mini conference. So plus, Glenn could not make it because his wife Mickey died, and so that was a tremendous experience there. And Glenn was also sick himself, and so that mini conference was held in I believe in Salt Fork, and it came off. By the grace of God, we left after that Sunday session where we had the conference actions on the agenda items. We had the votes, and we all left, and all of the attendees from the other three Ohio areas all went to Circleville to support Glenn for Mickey's memorial. That was a very spiritual day. It was a big, long day, but it was had to be done. And Glenn got sicker. See, that was a mini conference. When he went to the General Service Conference, he was sick that day. He was sick the whole conference. He really needed help getting to and from the committee meetings and so forth, the general sessions. And he came back, and my sponsor and I really helped him out because he wanted to give his he wanted to finish his conference report. It was the most important thing, and we helped him. And so I gave that report in June for Glenn, and it was a really special. I don't know what the feeling was really something that's very spiritual, some kind of spiritual experience there. And so I was grateful to my sponsor, and I was grateful to Glenn. And I trusted God, I was made the acting delegate. I know some people said, you are the delegate now, because the delegate, that's your job. You were the alternate delegate, now you're the delegate. And I didn't think of it along those lines. It didn't make any difference. I was the contact with the General Service Office, and I was getting all of the paperwork that Glenn would normally get as far as new groups and new GSRs and all that stuff. And so I did that and got elected in the fall of 2012, and went to my first General Service Conference next year, in May of 2013. And that year was an interesting year because we had one of the biggest things at the conference was the trustee committee had an agenda item that they were dealing with that had to do with a rearranging of the corporate boards, setting up a new structure. And apparently that the trustees had worked very hard getting together, trying to improve the system. They really believed sincerely, but the conference committee rejected it. And so the proposal never even came to the floor. There was no vote that could be made on it because I learned something how the committee system works at the General Service Conference. It has to make it out of the committee before it gets to the floor, before AA as a whole can vote on it. So the right of decision was made by the committee.
Yeah, Dave, it sounds like there was some really interesting experiences there, and your story with Glenn is very moving. We've only got a few minutes kind of left. Is there anything you'd like to kind of make sure you share with us before we end the tape?
Well, I couldn't be grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. I guess I could. I learned more about how this program works. This past year, I have worked harder on my steps than I ever have, and I have the simplest way to live that I know of. I always try to make up my own way, but this way always works for me. And if I surrender and I work with others and I work with my sponsor and I have been sober quite a few years. I'm convinced that I'm going to be going to AA meetings till my days are done, and I'm probably going to be thinking about my character defects even on my final days, I'm sure, because I just want to be at peace. I want to be able to live with myself. I heard a gentleman who was a past trustee and a past General Service Board chairman talking about just trying to be the kind of person that he could live with. And his name was George D. He was an older gentleman and he just had a love of life, and he had when I'm 85, I want to be in as much in love with life as he was. It's Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me almost everything I know about myself. And I know, and it's fun knowing more when I'm reaching out to help others and learning that what others have given me is more than I've ever given. And I want to thank the Archives Committee. I really think you're doing a great job. This is a great service opportunity, and I hope you to do more of this. And I'm thankful that I was asked, and I'm almost glad it's over.
Okay, well, thank you, Dave. Thanks for sharing your story with us, and I just want to make sure that you understand. Thank you for all of the service you've given to the area and to your group and stuff, and appreciate you sharing your story with you. And 10-4 over and out.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.